Ramsey TV.
You don't want to pay your taxes? Okay, go for it. Go crazy. Don't pay your taxes. You want to defend your rights? I have a right not to pay tax. Tax is unconstitutional. Go ahead, press your right and see what happens. I'm trying to save you, and so is Paul. If you think that getting that ominous letter from the IRS is living a mild and quiet life, go ahead. If you think sitting in a jail away from your family is noble because you pressed your rights and defended your constitutional autonomy, go ahead, have at it. See if that is leading a mild and quiet life. You want to spend thousands of dollars in legal fees fighting the system and think that after you beat the system that Paul and I are going to sit around applauding you as you sit in jail victorious that you beat the man? Just fantastic. Great. Look, Paul's trying to save you and I'm trying to save you. Paul's basically saying to the early believers, if you want to get eaten by a lion, then go ahead and defy the authorities. And if you think that getting eaten by a lion is a mild and quiet life, I would disagree with you, Paul says, and I also would disagree with you. This is Martin Zender from the edge of the bottom of the Floridan Peninsula, making sense for a living, whether you like it or not. And a lot of what I'm hearing in the comments is, I have my rights. Martin, the government is unconstitutional. Martin, taxes themselves are unconstitutional. You're missing the entire point. The entire point is, of course, it's all unconstitutional. But the point is that if you want to fight for your rights in this corrupt system, then you're going to suffer greatly. And I won't be congratulating you when you're in jail, being hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to lawyers that you beat the system. Good job. You beat the system. Oh, you got eaten by a lion. Fantastic. You defied the authorities. Congratulations. We're going to put your bones in a grave now. Yeah, good job. Good job. Trying to save you here. As far as your rights go, I would point us to Paul in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 7. Already then, it is absolutely a discomfiture for you that you are having lawsuits among yourselves. Wherefore are you not rather being injured? Wherefore are you not rather being cheated? Paul is saying that he would rather the believers be cheated than to stand up for their rights, and this against brethren. We have legitimate gripes against brethren, and we may have legitimate gripes against the government, but the government is going to do its thing, whether we like it or not. And so we would think that when we are dealing with each other, with believers, then, well, a believer would be more reasonable than the federal government. Therefore, we can bring lawsuits against one another. And Paul's overarching point here is to allow yourself to be defrauded. That's the spiritual way. Yes, you're being cheated. Yes, you're being defrauded. Let it go. Paul's saying, let it go. Some people are too proud to let it go. And that's the underlying thing here is pride. I'm too proud to let the government illicitly lord itself over my life. Too proud. That's the bottom line. Can't you just admit it? You can bring me all the eloquent arguments, all the detailed arguments of why you should be autonomous, of why the government has no right to tell you what to do, of why you're a personal sovereign. It doesn't matter how eloquent your arguments are. Because I'll keep coming back to the bottom line. Allow yourself to be defrauded. Not only will you be leading a mild and quiet life, but there is a chance you will abash the authority. And as Paul says, by rendering good for evil, heaping coals of fire upon his head. As I said yesterday, bake a cake for the superior authority and see what happens. It's been suggested to me that, well, Paul landed in jail because he went against the authorities. Jesus Christ got crucified because he went against the authorities. Not true. Concerning Jesus Christ, it is said, quote, they hated me gratuitously. That is, they hated Jesus Christ without a cause. He gave no one any cause to kill him. If he had defied the Roman authorities, he couldn't have said that. There is a cause. You broke the law. Jesus Christ never broke the law. Neither did Paul. It was the religious zealots who had no mantle of civil authority upon them who were persecuting Paul. Paul was obedient to the superior authorities. In fact, in the Ecclesia, listen to this. In the Ecclesias, Paul didn't even press his rights as an apostle. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, I had the right to take a wife like the other apostles. I have the right to live off the evangel because the Lord prescribed it, but I don't use these rights. So here's a guy who is admitting he has right after right after right after right, and he throws them all away for the sake of being an ideal person, not only in the evangel, but in the eyes of the Roman government. Ideal citizen. So if you want to press your rights, if you want to give me intricate, highfalutin arguments about why you are a sovereign, why the government has no right of any power over you, you're missing the entire point. Somebody made a great comment 2 days ago saying that, you know, Clyde Pilkington and this Dwayne Galantine guy, they're turning Paul back into Saul the persecutor. I love that. That's right. We have Paul who became a peaceful person, a lover of peace. And now we're supposed to believe that Paul is the one wielding the sword in Romans 13, and he's the one persecuting people, telling people to fear him because he has this great authority and that he will wreak vengeance. Yes, vengeance upon anyone who withstands him. Yes, you're turning Paul back into Saul. Saul the Pharisee, the persecutor. So you turn Paul into a persecutor of the very ecclesia, the very ecclesias that he is bringing into the faith. How tragically humorous. And then it is insisted to me that we are to be the arbiters of what is the good and evil of the context of Romans 13. And Romans 13, 4 says, do good and you will be having applause from it. That is from the superior authority. For it is God's servant for your good. I'm going to get into that God's servant thing because that's what's throwing off Galantine. For it is your servant, it is yours. It is God's servant for your good. Now, if you should be doing evil, fear, for not feignedly is the authority wearing the sword. People say to me, okay, Martin, well, if the authority is doing good, then we're to be subject to it. But if the authority in our esteemed estimation becomes evil, then we have no right to be subject to that authority. In this case, you are doing the exact thing Paul tells you not to do back in Romans 12, which is do not come to pass for prudent with yourselves. Don't come to pass as being the ultimate judge of what is good and evil. Because in fact, this is so simple. The good and evil of this context does not depend on a subjective opinion of when a government passes from good into evil. The good of this passage is subjection. That's the context. The evil of this passage is being insubordinate to the superior authorities. Those are the good and evil. That's the context. So do good and you will be having applause from the authority. But Martin, sometimes when you do good, the authority punishes you. How can Paul say that if you're doing good, you'll get applause from the authority? Paul must be talking about a good authority. No, the good of the context is subjection. And if you subject yourself to an authority, then you will have applause from any authority. Any authority will applaud you if you're subject to them. But if you do evil, fear. What's the evil of the context? Well, if the good of the context is being subject, then the evil of the context is being insubordinate. That is the good and evil of the context. This is not up for a vote. It's not up for an opinion. I'm a stickler for context, and that's what a lot of people are missing here. We decide what's good and what's evil. No, the context decides. And in the context, the good of the context is subjection. The evil is insubordination. Go ahead. Fight for your rights. Go ahead. Good job. You've taken away your own peace. You've landed your ass in jail. You've stuck your ass with thousands of dollars of legal fees defending your rights. To what result? You end up doing exactly what Paul told you not to do. You forfeit a mild and quiet life, all for the self-satisfaction of having beat the system. Good job. Not. All right. Going back to Mr. Galantine. And again, you know, I'm not going to keep harping on this, but I do have to, as you know, I do have to be thorough. And I will be thorough. There goes my voice again. What? Oh, the taxes. This is, speaking of taxes. Oh, by the way, I'm going to go back to Galantine's article. But when Paul says in verse 6, "For therefore you are settling taxes also, for they are God's ministers perpetuated for this self same thing." This God's ministers thing is really intense, because we only think of God's ministers as those who are doing good, and God's ministers. But Pharaoh was God's minister. Nebuchadnezzar was God's minister. This is mature truth to see that God's ministers are also those who are wreaking evil, because God uses evil to discipline people. He brought the king of Assyria against his people Israel. He brought many enemies against Israel to discipline them. And God calls the king of Assyria an axe in my hand. He is my servant. The king of Assyria is God's servant. How about that? Was Paul God's servant? Yes. Was the king of Assyria, an evil guy, God's servant? Yes. Because guess what? All things serve God, both good and evil. That is what is being missed here. When people like Dwayne Galantine see they are God's servants. And besides, why would Paul say they? If Paul's talking about himself, why would he say they are God's servants for your good? They. He would say we are God's servants for your good. But no, they are. This is mature truth. This is mature truth that even Nero became a servant of God. That's mature truth. So if you want to ignore that and put yourself in the place of a judge, put yourself in the place of one who decides what's good or evil, put yourself in the place of being prudent, then you will be the one who decides who is God's minister and who is not. And you will be predisposed to not being able to read this passage for what it says, which is the government is God's servant. Oh, along that line, got to read A.E. Nock here. Where do you hear this commentary? Now, I'm going to go back to the awful commentary from Dwayne Galantine of the Grace Brethren Church in Centuria, Wisconsin. Let us all pray for Centuria, Wisconsin. This is a good commentary on this passage. A.E. Nock nails it here in the Concordant Commentary. I quote, starting with verse 1 of Romans chapter 13, "Unlike Israel, we do not come into conflict with the rulers of the world. The setting up of the kingdom will involve the subjection of them all to the suzerainty of Christ, but we have no place in that earthly kingdom. While Israel is thrust aside, we must recognize the existing authorities." Here's the shocker, folks, and I quote, "God is not at variance with present governments." God is not at variance with present governments. That is the truth of Romans 13 that so many people gag on and choke on because they are prudent in their own eyes and in their own estimations. God is not at variance with present governments. It is not a question of obeying God rather than man, as when Peter refused the orders of the Sanhedrin. Oh, how many people point that out to me in early Acts? when Peter says to the Sanhedrin, should we not obey God and not man? The kingdom was at the door at that time. And Peter and James and the disciples were at the brink. Jesus said the kingdom is near. John the Baptist said the kingdom is near. They were at the brink of taking over the government. It would be a spiritual coup d'etat, but we know it wasn't destined to happen. But Peter and the 12, they will be melding church and state in the millennial kingdom. And at this phase in Acts, that was the soup du jour. That was the order of the day. And so they were saying, no, we're going to defy you. We're the authorities now. But what happened? This is what I always tell people. You say, Paul says in Romans 13:1 to be subject to authorities. But here's Peter in Acts chapter 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it is, telling us that he should obey God and not man. Here's the simple answer to that. Romans 13:1 hadn't been written yet. Romans 13:1 doesn't apply in Acts chapter 4 because it hadn't been written yet. Yeah, see, I make sense for a living. This is why you come here. How could you apply a truth that comes later with an event that happens prior to that truth being revealed? In fact, after Romans 13 is written, Peter himself says in one of his letters that we are to be subject to kings, and to authorities. Peter changed his tune. What happened? What happened was a new administration came to town, and it was one of being subject to the superior authorities because God's plan for Israel had been temporarily set aside to make room for an unprophesied administration called the administration of the grace of God, during which we are to be exemplary citizens. I continue with A. E. Nock, but I have to repeat this because it's so good. God is not at variance with present governments. It is not a question of obeying God rather than man, as when Peter refused the orders of the Sanhedrin, we must not withstand regularly constituted magistrates, but depend on God to overrule their acts if they seem to conflict with our duty to God or our convictions of his truth. And, yeah, if you want to go out and vote, if you want to be part of the legislative process to vote, then go ahead and vote. I am for it. In fact, I'm going to comment on this a little later when I finally get to the little piece by Alan Burns I've been promising to get to. He thinks nobody should be involved in any civil activities because that is a direct opposition. That is direct conflict with our celestial allotment. Nothing could be further from the truth. That is a ridiculous statement. Our conflict is with, back to A.E. Nock, I quote, our conflict is with the sovereignties and the authorities and the world mights, the spiritual forces of wickedness among the celestials. We are to be sandaled with the evangel of peace, the evangel of peace. So if you think not paying your taxes in defiance of the federal government, IRS, if you think that's consistent with the evangel of peace, with the evangel of being defrauded, then again, go wild. I might even visit you in jail. Of course, I would visit you in jail. Back to Nock, I quote, the true believer should make the most exemplary citizen, for he has a deeper motive and a more powerful impulse to obedience than the unbeliever. He recognizes, or should I add, he recognizes the civil authorities as God's servants. That's the point I was making earlier. They are God's servants. This is shocking truth to babies. They don't want to hear that the evil authorities are God's servants. They want to rebel. But what did God, because rebellion is in the human heart, what did God tell Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and all the house of Judah that went into captivity into Babylon? He said, this thing is of me. What did he say when the kingdom of Israel broke up after the days of Solomon and the northern tribes, the house of Israel, went to Samaria and the southern tribes, the house of Judah, stayed in Jerusalem? He said, this thing is of me. So Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they get the word from God. This thing is of me, even though it's completely illicit. It's completely illegal. Is it legal? for Nebuchadnezzar to march an army into Jerusalem and to take the sacred things of the temple, to plunder God's temple? What worse thing could you possibly do than to march into the Holy of Holies to take the candlestick, to take the Ark of the frickin' Covenant? Is that legal? Is that nice? Don't you have a right, Israel, to maintain your own vessels of worship? Ah, but God said, this thing is of me. And he said, go to Babylon, do your thing, plant, sow and reap. Pray to me, I am with you under the yoke of the oppressor. I am with you under the yoke of the oppressor. And if you want things to go well for you, you will acknowledge that this is of me, because I'm telling you, if you resist Babylon, you will die. This is what Paul is saying in Romans 13. If you resist Rome, you will die. This is what I'm telling you in 2019. If you resist the civil authorities, you will die. Either you will literally die, or you will die of worry and by fretting whether or not the government's going to find you out. You want that kind of a life? Go for it. God is warning you against it. Many times in Israel's history, we see it again and again. This thing is of me. Rome, in the days of our Lord, occupying Jerusalem, that was of God. Jesus himself recognized it when he said to Pilate, you would have no power except it were given to you from above. Paul is saying the same thing that our Lord was saying when he was standing before Pilate. The powers that be are from above. And whoever is withstanding those authorities, however evil they may be, are withstanding God's mandate. Did you see Jesus Christ withstanding the authorities? No. You saw him as a lamb before the shearers, standing before the Roman government. He did not return evil for evil. He returned good for evil. Pilate was so moved by that, he wanted to release Jesus. He fought for him because he was moved by the submissiveness. That is the good of the context of Romans 13. Submissive to the superior authorities. Our Lord demonstrated it. Paul demonstrated it. Daniel demonstrated it. I am trying to demonstrate it. I am demonstrating it. And I am imploring you to demonstrate it to the world, to the authorities. People, no, you don't want to bow. Nobody wants to bow their head to an oppressor. Oh no, we have our rights. It's base pride. You want to beat the man. You want to beat the system. They're not taking my guns. They're not forcing me to pay unconstitutional taxes. I will not bow the knee. I will not bow the head. I will not stay silent before Pilate. I will not go to Babylon without a fight. That's the way you want to live. You are in defiance of our apostle of peace. But Paul's not going to beat you with a stick. He's not going to cut your head off. He'll say, don't come crying to me. I told you so. I have to finish with A. E. Nock. Commentary from the Concordant Commentary of the New Testament. I'm going to have to obviously get back to the taxes tomorrow. I've been talking about taxes today. It's been one of the themes. Paul says in Romans 13, you give taxes to those who are due taxes. Jesus Christ said the same thing. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Dwayne Galantine and Clyde Pilkington are saying that Paul's not talking about taxes owed to the government. He's talking about tribute owed to the saints, owed to Paul. But I have proof from other scriptures, in fact, from the only two other scriptures where this tax is used, that this is tribute given to Caesar. It is not a, quote, free will offering given to the apostles. I have proof of that, and I'm going to quote that later. A. Enoch says we are to be sandaled with the evangel of peace. The true believer should make the most exemplary citizen, for he has a deeper motive and a more powerful impulse to obedience than the unbeliever. He recognizes the civil authorities as God's servants. What a mature outlook. And has a conscience which should make him the most law-abiding. The unbeliever is deterred from evil by fear and respect for a human institution. We recognize existing governments as of divine origin. Yes, I told you that even an evil government is keeping some evil at bay. That seems like a contradiction that an evil body would keep evil at bay, but it actually does. It actually does. In the Roman government, evil though it may have been in many parts of its constitution, was a holder back of the evil that is inherent in humanity. And some people in humanity, they won't be subject to anybody unless it's by force. They won't be subject unless there's a sword. And some of you aren't even that noble. Even when there is a sword, you're going to defy it anyway. We recognize existing governments as of divine origin. So we submit to them by a different reason. The unbeliever submits because they're scared that they're going to be caught and they're scared that they're going to be punished. We do it because we are lights in the world and we do not return evil for evil. Anybody who's insisting on their rights to fight the man, you're returning evil for evil. Don't you see that? You're fighting evil with evil. And you're promoting it and you're criticizing me for promoting peace and for promoting subjection to the superior authorities, for understanding what Paul is saying here in Romans 13. Some of you are criticizing me for that. Because your idea is to render evil for evil. Oh yeah, I'm going to resist. That's my reaction to the evil. Oh, so you're rendering evil for evil. Oh, that fits right in with Romans 12, doesn't it? No, it's in direct defiance of Romans 12. To no one render evil for evil. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. You're pissed about taxes? You're pissed about the way the government tells you to live? Well, vengeance is God's. He's going to wreck the government. Does that make you happy? It should. Okay, I'm going to make you happy here. God is going to wreck the government that you hate. Okay, God's going to do it. Vengeance is his, not yours. In the meantime, you subject to it. God will take care of it. God judged Nebuchadnezzar. The people were to be subject. God judged Rome. Jesus Christ was subject. Let God do the vengeance, my fellow believers. I finish with verse 6. A.E. Knox commentary. This is amazing. This is the kernel of truth. This is mature truth. This is not milk, what I'm about to read to you. Quote, it may seem a strange paradox, yet it is a sad fact that many who are ministers of God in name are not so in truth. And many a magistrate who would not dare consider himself a minister of God is such in fact in the execution of his office. These governments, these civil sovereignties mentioned by Paul in Romans chapter 13, they are not declared believers. They're not members of the body of Christ. That's for sure. And yet, God calls them his ministers because they are affecting his will and his ultimate intention, whether for good or evil, on the earth. How ironic that those who, again, as A.E. Knox says, those who would never claim to be his ministers for good, in fact, are his ministers for good. Yet many of those who would claim to be God's ministers for good, i.e. the pastors and religious teachers in Christianity, they are in fact opposed to God. So we find that the civil authorities are actually working God's will on the earth, whereas the religious authorities are defying it. Of course, they're subserving it absolutely, but I'm talking about a relative paradox here, where the civil authorities are God put in place, speaking relatively now, and the religious authorities are a complete wreck, and they are actually less esteemed in the eyes of God than the civil authorities. Put that in your tax envelope and pay it.